Welcome to the Lance Holt School Podcast, a history of our school.
G'day. My name is Lance Holt. There's an old saying, if I hear it, I forget. If I see it, I remember. If I do it, I know. Learning should be fun. And we're here to have fun.
So my name's Declan Burke. I think I started in Lance Holt around 1999, and I graduated definitely in 2008. I grew up here, I guess would be my involvement in the place. That would, yeah. If I was to describe the school to someone who had never been here, I think I would say it's a hippie school to start with. You know, it's not like a Montessori or a Steiner school necessarily. It's a little bit more structured. But it is a school that, you know, they have artwork from the entire time the school has been here on the walls and on the desks and on the ceiling and hanging from things. And so it's a school that when you go there as a student, you know that you are a part of something greater than yourself and you are going to be a part of something greater than yourself for a very, very long time.
Hello, my name's Gary Burke. I was involved with the school in a variety of roles, initially as an interested bystander in the early 70s, and then as a parent in the early to mid 80s, and then again in the late 90s and so on. I never served on the board, but I was music teacher, song teacher for a while. I was a pretty much a full-time musician then, which meant that I wasn't earning very much, and so I sort of did a contra deal for fees for a long time. And I had themes in the music. I taught Australian songs, you know, which related to the syllabus a bit, the history of Australia, the different perspectives from Botany Bay to Blackfella, Whitefella. And I did it by ear because I'm a believer in that music, when it's learned that way, helps your cognitive development, because it helps us all remember patterns and to trust our mind to be there when we need it, I suppose. A bit later on, I also ran ukulele classes there, again by ear, where we'd just strum and sing and learn by pattern. We formed a band for a while called the Eucalypts, which was some renown amongst the parents. But that was always encouraging. And particularly when Amy was there in her upper middle years, when the US naval base was set up in Garden Island, it was quite a dark time in Fremantle. There was, the streets often had, literally packs of Marines, about 30 strong, running up and down South Terrace going, hut, 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 and it was really, really frightening for all of us, but especially the children. So we sang a lot of songs, to raise spirits and not be afraid. That gave extra purpose to the music, I felt, in those days.
Hi, my name's Laura Stocker. I was a parent involved in the school from the late 90s through to the early 2000s, and I was also chair of the school board for several years during that period.
I first heard about the school before we had a child. We came along to a fundraiser at Lance Holt School, and I won a prize, a basket full of sort of alternative hair products, which was fantastic. So that was the first time I heard about Lance Holt School. We didn't have a child at that stage. When Declan came along years later, he was a baby, and he was born in the same year as Tori Leonard. So we were at the park one day, at the Esplanade, and we ran into Catherine, who was there with the school doing their playtime thing. This would have been, maybe 1997. And she asked us if we were going to enrol Declan in Lance Holt School, because there was quite a long waiting list. And we said, yes, definitely we'd be enrolling him at Lance Holt School.
Hi, my name is Deborah Salahuddin. I started teaching at Lansott School in 1986 and I'm still there now. To this day, I'll never forget walking in the front door of Lansott and it had a really quite bizarre smell. And this spaciousness of a cavity of an old warehouse, and walking in and feeling absolutely and completely, totally at home, comfortable. And went through the motions of an interview around the kitchen table of the coordinator at the time, who was Jim Thompson, and several parents, I can't name them now, but knowing that this was my place. And yeah, funnily enough, it was.
Can you tell me about art at Lance Holt School?
I've never really been a particularly artistic person. Some people can't dance. They have two left feet. I have two left hands. But I think in spite of that, Deborah as an art teacher really, really never gave up on me, which I am very grateful for. I am still rather proud of a little clay rat that we made. I remember making clay rats and we all made them based on puns. And I made a rat that was swimming in a bowl of soup and I called it Ratatouille. It's got a little carrot over its back. And, you know, like a bit of celery in there, and it's swimming around in this little tomato soup, and it's just a smiley little rat in a bowl of soup. And it's still on the mantelpiece at home, and I think it's probably one of my favourite pieces of art that I've ever done. It's not technically good, but I'm still surprised how much it looks like a rat in a bowl of soup. I really like it.
My name is Sam Wynn and I was a teacher at Lance Holt School for over 20 years. I started there in 1992 and I finished there in 2017. Over those years I taught pre-primary year one. I started the kindergarten. I was the senior early childhood teacher and then the lead teacher at Lance Holt. We had a bit of a crisis in the school, I think, in the change of leadership when Ron moved on to take up his role at AISWA. It was a really big challenge for the school to try and identify our, put into words what it meant to be Lance Holt. And we often talked about this is the Lance Holt way, but we realised that we weren't very good at actually articulating what that way was. So we did go through a bit of a crisis then. We employed someone that didn't turn out to be the right fit for our school and it did cause a lot of disruption within the community and a lot of mixed feelings within the community. It required us to get clear about who we were as a school and to be able to really clearly articulate what it means and what it meant to be Lance Holt School. So although it was a crisis, in the end, it turned out to be something that really strengthened us as a school because we became much more articulate and clearer about who we are and what we believe and what that looks like in practice. And that was how Catherine ended up becoming our coordinator. She stepped into the role because we couldn't find someone who suited that role. She stepped into that role reluctantly because she was a classroom teacher and she was a great classroom teacher. But we really needed someone to step up into that role and she did it and she agreed to do it for a period of time until they could find someone else. And conveniently, we never found someone else, so we got to keep her.
I'm Dave Palmer. My partner's the infamous Jenny Buchanan. She was on school council and worked in the office and did lots of things. And that guaranteed that I wasn't allowed to do anything of substance. A principal that had been here for a long time, Ron, who was loved by everybody, he moved on. So poor old Cat, and we kept asking really earnest questions like, you know, what's not so good about the school? But the poor thing had just stepped into her role, having been the, I think, year four teacher, year five teacher or so, yeah. So we weren't very good parents. We hadn't done the run-up stuff that you're supposed to do, like when your kids turn two, put them down on lists and go and interview various schools and get things lined up. We were told we should. And then when our eldest boy went to kindy, we thought we'd best hurry up because he was four. and we immediately roamed around the neighbourhood. There were some fantastic schools. We were spoilt, really. And we had no real idea. We'd heard about Lance Holt because many of our older friends as kids had gone to the school, probably in the 80s and 90s, and they were great kids. Many of our friends were dodgy, but, you know. So we put his name down at Lance Holt School, and within 2 weeks there was a spot that came up, and we were phoned up and said, do we want to take it? We had a couple of days to decide. So that was the first.
My name is Jenny Buchanan, and my sons Callum and Matt started at Lance Holt in the year 2000. Matt started in 2004. And finished in 2012. I was here as a parent. I was on council for 8-9 years. I also worked as a project coordinator on the Kids Placemaps project. The website still is active. And also worked in the school in administrative and support roles in Canberra Camp and reaccreditation work. So, yeah, I was in the woodwork for a while. Very happily.
We have a friend who was a photographer with the West in the 1970s and 80s. And when he learnt our eldest was coming to Lance Holt, he said he did a story in the 70s. And so he came into the school, and what struck him was the sound of kids' laughter and joy. And that was around about the time we started here. And the next time I came into the school, I went, yes. You've got three stories of laughter and joy, the sounds of kids having fun, and that's one of the things that I recollect, which is pretty constant first thing in the morning before school started.
It appeared slightly chaotic and a little bit rusty, or, you know, a little bit messy. Beautiful sounds, playful sounds, and gorgeous art, like children's work and art everywhere. And for me, that was, you know, that got me. I know you get that in classrooms everywhere, but it felt like the building was held up by the art, and that's always a glorious thing.
Can you tell me who got to speak at morning meeting?
I'm actually still really fond of the institution that is morning meeting, and it's morphed over the years. I haven't been to one since the kids were here, but I really like... There are a number of things about the school meeting that are terrific. The first is that always a student would host it or chair it, and they'd have a standard sort of script that they'd memorise, but often there'd be, you know, the older kids would have their own signature that they'd put on it. But I loved the connection between, you know, the old classic conventions of democracy and bringing people together in a central space. It's also when, you know, those of us who came to the school because we didn't have any friends, it was a great excuse for us to gather around and chat. And I remember Wendy at one point regularly shooing parents out because they'd hung around for too long, sort of gossiping and chatting and having their social needs met. And Wendy would say, excuse me, adults, we're trying to learn here. Yeah, but the morning meetings are really... I've got fond memories of morning meetings, and some of the fun and fabulous things that were shared.
Oh, I remember morning meeting. I don't remember anything that I said, but I remember some of my favourite things that people said at morning meeting. And I think everyone that went to Lance Holt does. Actually, I remember talking to a lot of my friends at the time who went to, I guess, more formal schools. And they would always talk about having assemblies where, you know, they were, you know, they sat down in rows in their uniforms and they shut up. And, you know, the adults talked at them about things. And I remember thinking, why on earth would you agree to that? Why would anyone think this is a constructive use of anybody's time? I mean, it's nerve-wracking, don't get me wrong, to like stand up and say something in front of the entire school. But I also think it's probably really good for public speaking and confidence. If you've been practicing since you were 4... at speaking in front of 100 people. Speaking in front of 100 people is not something you do a lot as an adult, and so it's difficult to kind of get that as like a skill base in the adult world. especially with such like a low risk. Like if you say something stupid in morning meeting, the only thing that's going to happen is, you know, maybe people will make fun of you about it for a couple of days and someone will bring it up 15 years later on a podcast. But like other than that, it doesn't really matter. Whereas I think if I was speaking in front of 100 people as an adult, like as a 24-year-old adult, and I said something stupid, like, you know, I'd be mortified. Like so much could go wrong from that, or so much more could go wrong from that, at least in theory. Obviously, I think Lance Holt does everything better than every other school. But I think morning meeting is something that Lance Holt does so much better than every other school, especially in terms of, like, I don't know, putting you on more of an equal footing with the people that work here, like, you know, the teachers and stuff, like the figures of authority, because, I mean, addressing them by their first names and, you know, not wearing uniforms and stuff, that all helps. But, like, you know, everyone's sitting around and then, you know, the person who is, you know, in charge of the entire school says something and you can just put your hand up straight away afterwards and say, I went to the beach. And everyone's like, yeah, sick. And they pay just as much attention to you as they did to the person who is in charge of the entire school. And I think that's really special.
Yeah, hi, my name is Genevieve Hawkes. My daughter Olivia started school here in 2001 and my son, who's 3 years younger than her, started after that. Both went all the way through. We moved to Fremantle from Sydney when my daughter, my firstborn, was about one. And for a short while before we bought a house, we were renting downtown in Fremantle and didn't have a backyard, so we would bring the I would bring Olivia to play in the Esplanade Park. And it was there that I noticed this group of children who would come and play. And I was so impressed by the way they played together that I remember I went up and asked who they were. I didn't think they were a school because it was didn't seem big enough for a school. And also the thing that most struck me about it was that was all this play across age groups that I thought was beautiful. And when they said that they were from Lance Holt School, I just put that in the back of my mind. And when actually, as Dave was describing, we weren't that organised either. So when we came to see whether Olivia, well, when we assumed that Olivia would be able to come to school, we were told, no, it was all booked up. When we came to look at the school, and I guess we had looked at a couple of other schools, we said to my daughter afterwards, which one did you like best? And she said, I like the one with all the stairs. And I think there were fewer sets of stairs then than there even are now.
What was the Lance Holt school community like?
Well, I remember thinking it was the sort of school I wished I'd gone to. I loved the fact that it was non-competitive, didn't make children feel that they were competing against one another, although they were encouraged, obviously, to strive for their own, to be the best they could be. It was very friendly, had a really family feel about it. I didn't have particularly clingy children, but I did love the fact that if they wanted me to stick around, I would stick around, and I did stick around a lot, not just because they wanted me to, because I liked it so much. I mean, I really admired the fact that the teachers would let you sit up at the back of the classroom for the start of the class. I gather that's sort of unheard of in some other schools because that's really thought to be an imposition. But it was just the nature of things here.
I was on council from probably about 2001, I think, and I used that as a support role. We went through a time of the reaccreditation where you have to word what you do, and when you do something as magical and rich as what gets done here, it's hard to reduce it to, you know, dead language administrative words that take the life out of things.
While I was chair of the board, the school had to become registered for the first time. Prior to that, independent schools didn't have to go through any kind of registration process. And Lance Holt School, having had the history it was, there was a lot of community memory in people's heads, and a lot of the, you know, so-called rules and policies were in people's heads, or they were historic and not necessarily written down. So it was a big job for the board, and the teachers carried a tremendous load in writing all those policies down, and all the procedures and everything had to be written down for the first time. But the teachers, you know, they did such a great job. Catherine did a brilliant job, and we flew through the registration process with flying colours and got 7 years worth of registration, which was the most you could get. So that was, I thought that was really hats off to the school for being able to bring all its corporate or community memory together and put that down in writing. And it showed how, to me, it showed both the community aspect of the school and the strength of that community memory, but it also showed that we could really do the formal stuff as well. And I felt very proud of the school for being able to bridge that divide between the alternative community values on one hand, but the formal governance procedures on the other, and we were able to do both of those. The process was actually fairly seamless from the parents' point of view, and nothing really changed dramatically within the school because we went on doing what we'd always done. It was just that it was written down. So it wasn't really an era of the change of practice. It was just a case of formalising and writing down all that practice. And the school had a statement of values, which was, I'm sure, is still relevant and still used, and that guided, you know, everything we did.
That was quite a critical time too, because it was there were a lot of schools springing up from fundamentalist groups, and the federal government wanted to put a clamp on it, and so they started bringing in a lot of restrictions about what had to be taught, how the school had to be organised, even, you know, that you had to have a flagpole to fly the flag on if you wanted to get funding. And that was the time, I thought, that was the time when Laura and that board was there, and it's very lucky that they were, because they really steered it through that quite a huge pile of, you know, new administrative requirements and checks and everything like that. And I mean, Catherine did amazing work, but the board also did fabulous stuff.
Hard times and dissent and conflict, as there always is in a community. But we worked our way through them, and there was lots of delight and lots of busyness. And I think that was part of it too, is that you get busy and the joy sort of doubles when you get your hands in, get dirty and get in amongst it.
At that time, a lot of the parents on the board were from Declan's class. So there was Jenny Buchanan was the deputy chair. Bob White was the secretary. Richard, who was a law professor at UWA, was the treasurer. There were a number of parents who were very great board members, and it was a real privilege to be on that board with them and to chair that board. We had a lot of fun as well. Bob White was always hilarious as a secretary because he was Professor of English at UWA, so obviously he was going to be the secretary and take the minutes. And he would write these very detailed minutes, and into them he would insert some kind of Shakespearean reference, and he'd send the minutes around and he would say, "Here are the minutes, please check for Eros," you know, E-R-O-S. So we had to go through the minutes and check them all thoroughly, and if we didn't find the Shakespearean reference, he'd know we hadn't read them thoroughly. So that was his way of making sure we read the minutes.
Dave had spoken earlier about how risk management came in and changed schools' capacities to actually have camps and excursions. And when I was on council, I remember it being a real issue that you had insurance matters to think about, and things were starting to restrict. September 11 events had occurred. Things suddenly got really deadly serious. And it became, it was possible that the paperwork was going to actually start determining the practice. And we worked really hard to not do that. And that's something I'm proud of the Lance Holt teachers for continuing to value the role of excursions and camps and beautiful deep learning in the face of more restricted policies and changes that occurred.
The school camps were always fabulous. I mean, rottenness, I'm sure people have spoken about that. And I just love the way people make, you know, 44-gallon drums of spaghetti bolognese, you know, and just dish it up. And I've had people say to me that they, when they're travelling, they can always tell people that have been to the Lansholt School or the community school, because they just make things happen, you know, when they're camping. You're always being useful and helpful and getting in to make stuff happen. And I found that when I was touring with the band with Sam and Adam and people, that would just made it a lot easier because everyone knew how to get on and how to make good meals, you know, out of not much for a lot of people.
Well, the Rottnest camps were just marvellous, and they were, in some ways, they're iconic events. There's been lots of pressure on schools, lots of institutions to manage risk and to constrain things, and as a consequence, many schools have lost their excursions and their camps. And other schools, you drop your kids off to go on their school camp and then you don't see them for the next whatever days. There was usually somewhere in the order of 190 parents or adults that went over on the ferry and 100 or so kids. And the fact that as an adult you could go over to Rottnest and join any activities you wanted, the kind of convention was that you'd help prepare one meal and then you go to Jenny's veranda at 5 o'clock, wherever she was, and get on it. All very respectfully, of course.
I never mastered the art of getting my children to fall asleep without me lying next to them. So I do remember a lot of those evenings when Jenny was hosting drinkies in the on the veranda. I do remember enviously listening from the from a dark room where I was lying with a child that wasn't quite asleep before I could join the fun.
But there was always lots of music as well. Even those of us who are pretty ordinary with a guitar or a mandolin, there'd be music being played. It was usually the case that on the final night over in Rottnest, because we effectively hired out the two end streets towards Bathurst Island. Again, I don't know if that's what happens now, but we'd shut down a street, put the tables in the middle, and we'd have the meal and play music together.
The Rottnest camp, the Wadjimup camp, and that was my youngest son's final camp. He was unwell for the first few days, so he'd missed quite a lot. And there was one evening, just as he was sort of getting better, and a couple of lovely dads came around to check in on him, just, you know, asked us how he's going, and proceeded to sit on our veranda and play guitar very quietly and gently. And my boy came out, wrapped up in his sleeping bag, snuggled up on that hard wooden bench that's always out the front of those Rottnest chalets, and sat there and listened to, I think there was probably about 5 or 6 dads that were playing, and it was beautiful. It was his, you know, he came, it was like a little cocoon that he got to feel safe and loved, and that someone noticed he was missing. And so that was particularly beautiful, and I think those things speak about the care and the kindness that underlies, you know, the joy and the funny things that occur, the camps and, you know, excursions, and that they come from both parents, teachers, the community, and from the kids themselves.
There is one thing that I would like to claim, although maybe others will too, but I think that me and my team instituted the curry night at Rotto Camp, where we created this big long table event. And I don't think anyone hated me for it, but I know that unlike the other meals where people would start prep on that morning, I would I would badger people to help me do prep for every day up until the final night. But hopefully it was worth it. It was fun.
The camps are amazing, and, you know, hooning around at 6 in the morning on your bike and just spotlight at night was, you know, that was incredible. Like, you know, going to the shops and, you know, trying to sneak money past the teachers so you could get like more lollies than they had intended you to have was also, you know, good in a way. Don't do this if you're listening, but it was a lot of fun. And I don't know, I know everyone is going to say that the camps are their favourite part of Lance Holt School, but no, like, you know, sue me. They were fantastic.
My name's Alex Morse. I'm a parent. I was a parent at Lance Holt School. I had three kids, three boys, who went through Lance Holt from the years 2002 to 2014, I think. I was a member of school council for a number of years, and then I became chair of council for about 4 years. School camps were fantastic. You know, there were so many really good ones. One of the really memorable ones was down at Donnelly River, and it was basically a mud fest. These kids were honestly, you know, most of them would be, you know, up to their eyeballs in mud, and you could see them, and there was no way of cleaning them, you know, and it was really cold. And then they were also being chased around by the emus, because there was emus, you know, running around, and you could feed them, and they became quite aggressive, you know. So you have, it's very funny watching these mud spattered children running away from aggressive emus and trying to actually intervene. But it was really good. And a couple of kids, you know, their parents didn't go, and they, you know, their sleeping bags were covered in mud, and, you know, it was just chaos, but really funny and really good fun.
How did the Canberra Camp come about?
Well, Canberra Camp, again, came from, you know, we have a real interest in civics and agency, and, like, kids feeling able to do something, that if they notice something, that they have the capacity to do it, that they'll be listened to. And so, you know, Seth's interest in politics, because he was really strong in teaching the kids about the political system and does a mean Gough Whitlam's, got, you know, well may we say, save the Queen, does that beautifully. So we said, why don't we take them to Canberra? Because we saw there was a little bit of funding, you know, there's funding for schools as long as you go to the top sites. So we did it, not knowing that it was going to become a biannual event. And it was a hoot. It was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
Hi, I'm Seth Yeoman. I'm the Year 5-6 teacher at Lance Holt School. I started there in October 1995. Jenny and Catherine, they'd actually heard about the funding of going to Canberra, and that was probably the first time I heard of it. And that was around about 2007. Jenny's oldest boy was in my class, and we had a lot of parents who were really supportive of the idea. I just thought, God, you know, it's hard enough getting kids down to Busselton and Albany, let alone Canberra. So its logistics are huge. And then they talked about funding's available. And then Jenny and I went to Burswood, and they had a presentation. They had a representative from all the educational places in Canberra giving a 10-minute spiel about what their place is and what the educational benefits are. And there must have been 20 of them, I guess. And I was just blown away. I just thought, this ticks so many boxes.
Our group were the first group to go to Canberra. A number of parents got together and after Seth and Jenny had put the idea to us, and we kind of gathered around, and we agreed that if we're all in or no one's in, it was going to cost us a few dollars. So we didn't want to exclude anyone. So it was a big deal. And Seth, and he probably still does, he prepares his class beautifully, talking about politics and Australian political institutions for the term leading up to it, perhaps all the whole year. So we went to Canberra, and these kids were profoundly well educated.
We had so much support that why not? We had to do it. And once everyone got on board, I just thought it would probably be just me organising it, but it wasn't. It was everyone. It was Jenny organising it, Catherine supporting it, you know, me doing all the pre-work. So we worked together as a team, and it all came together. And the first one was really successful, and then we thought, what the heck, let's do it every 2 years.
So we needed to go and visit a range of the educational institutions, or the major cultural institutions. And the first one we visited was Old Parliament House. And we'd arranged to go there much earlier. And so instead of, we parked the bus, got out of the bus, instead of turning, going across the road to Parliament House, we went left to the Aboriginal Tent Embassy. And, you know, the Eternal Fire was down there. There were a couple of tents to the left. So we arranged to go and introduce ourselves. And all of the students introduced themselves in a chorus of Aya Nyang Nyang Abudya Nyang Nining, you know, hellos. We're from Noongar country. That's where we sit. And the people at the embassy were just blown away, a bunch of, you know, middle-class white kids. They're going, where are you from? Because just across the road there were streams and streams of kids going from well-uniformed schools, and they would just turn their noses up at the tent embassy and go straight across to Parliament.
It was such a contrast because, as David pointed out, there was the old Parliament House, and there were schools all dressed in their uniforms, and, you know, good old Lance Holt, we were in tracky pants and, you know, ski jackets and things like that and jeans. And we went across, and, you know, it was fantastic because Dave and Jenny were with us, and David managed to rustle up someone from the tent embassy, one of the people staying there, and basically said, oh, look, can you come across and talk to the kids? And he was more than willing. He came across, and David gave the welcome to country in Noongar. And this guy was just blown away. He thought, this is fantastic. You're doing wonderful things at this school, obviously recognising Indigenous culture. And he was a Koori gentleman from the east coast of Australia. So, and then he was just more than happy to take questions from the kids. He gave us a great history of the tent embassy, how it all started, the reasons why it started, where it was, why it was there. And the kids just fed off that. They just was just a lot of fantastic questions. But watching all the other kids, the buses roll up, the teachers would look over and then just turn their backs and keep walking. And, you know, and then one year we did have a group from Bunbury, one of the Bunbury high schools. They saw us sitting there and they tentatively came across with their teacher and sat down and joined us as well.
Old Parliament House, the educational officer would take kids through, and probably still does, take them through a bit of a dress-up thing. So each of the kids would take on a role. And I fondly remember Stefan, really earnest, sharp kid like most Lance old kids. He was given the role of Governor General, so he gets his Governor General cape on and might have had a wig, and he had the Speaker and Leader of the Opposition and the Prime Minister and the Sergeant at Arms, and and so all of this, they'd done all the preparation and they'd wardrobed up and they were ready to go, and Steph yells out, oh, hang on, oh, I can't be a Governor General, I'm a Republican. To which this beautiful educational officer said, it's all right, darling. I suspect you're not the first GG that's been a secret Republican.
Steph was a unique kid. He was wired differently than a lot of the other kids, and I often told his parents that he was probably wired by the same electrician as me. So, but I just remember him, you know, he was so eager to get dressed up, and I picked him. I said, okay, Steph. Then I realised that he was a Republican. You know, he's all of 11 years old, whatever. And he goes, oh, yeah, I just have to remind you that I am a card-carrying Republican. You know, just the card-carrying Republican secret, you know, Secret Service sort of thing.
There was a lovely young man who had trouble with sleepwalking, and the boys in our house really wanted him to stay with us. Now, I had nothing to do with this. This was separate to me and any of the adults on camps. The lads worked out how they could keep this lovely young man safe. And so they set up all their mattresses in the lounge. They moved all their beds into the lounge. They put the chairs all around those mattresses, and then they put chairs in the walkway to the door, then had a chair by the door. So that if this lovely young man happened to wake up during the night, they would hear him and keep him safe. And it was beautiful. It was just beautiful, these 11-year-old boys. So he was able to stay and have a lovely camp experience.
Was there tuck shop? And was there a favourite?
Well, the thing that I remember most was actually doing tuck shop by ourselves for the first time, my wife and I, and we decided we were going to do this thing called cowboy stew, which is basically just tons of baked beans with hot dogs dropped in it. And, you know, we wouldn't tell anyone what cowboy stew was, okay? This is, and it was, you know, how you put it on the front and people are going to get cowboy stew and the kids are really excited. And unfortunately, we had not realise that basically there's one setting on the stove which is really hot and the whole bottom got burnt. So it was basically like burnt baked beans and hot dogs, and it was just really disgusting. And so we were standing there doling out this really horrible food and everyone was going, wah.
I have many happy memories of tuck shop lunches. I think the one that stands out most in my memory was the Morses making what they called cowboy stew, which was baked beans with sausages chopped up and stirred through it. That's still a family favourite in our family.
So, my dad, Gary Burke, is a monster. I love him very dearly, but he always joked when I was going through Lance Holt School that when it was his turn to do tuck shop, because Laura had done tuck shop several times, but he always joked when it was his turn, he was going to make everyone for dessert have broccoli and chocolate sauce. And I always thought, you know, like I was always like, this is too ridiculous. Like, he's saying this as a joke. He's doing this, you know, to kind of wind me up. And I'd always go, don't do that. And then in year 7, when it was his turn to do tuck shop, and he called out, you know, he was like, dessert's ready. And everyone in the school came streaming down. And my dad, Gary Burke, who had quite a bit to do with the founding of this school, had served every single child in the school a bowl of steamed broccoli with chocolate sauce on it. And all of the kids were looking at me like, what? What has your dad done? And I was like, I can't tell him what to do. He's my dad. He's in charge. Like, he did this, not me. This wasn't my idea. And it wasn't actually that bad. Because as I've discovered as an adult, if you eat two things that are totally not meant to go together, like a Monte Carlo and a curry was something I had a couple of years ago. Monte Carlo is a jam cream biscuit, for those that don't know. Arnott sell them. If you eat two things like that, your brain actually just separates the tastes in your mouth. And so you're just eating broccoli and also eating chocolate sauce. And your brain kind of doesn't really pass them as like a combination. It's just like, oh, I'm eating broccoli. It tastes like broccoli. I'm eating chocolate sauce. It tastes like chocolate sauce. And so it was kind of just like having chocolate sauce for dessert. It actually wasn't too bad. But he did make an entire school of children eat a bowl of broccoli and chocolate sauce.
Surprise was always, you know, ice cream and jelly or something. And I couldn't help myself but think of what might be a surprise. And so the surprise that we came up with Ford was to have broccoli with chocolate on it, and it was quite popular on the day. I don't know if there's been any repeats, but I mean, it was surprise, you know. Be careful what you wish for. I think one of the things I really like about the school is the children are not afraid of the adults, and I've had this, and I've seen it, and I had people tell me about it later, that, you know, visitors, when they go to they're quite amazed that a small child will come up and ask them a question just because they're a grown-up and they probably know. And, you know, there's no fear. You know, the discipline that's there is always reasonable and explained and contextually appropriate. And I think that is the greatest thing about the school, that the kids come out of it not being afraid of being themselves and not being afraid to go up to people and ask for information. I really love that.
Can you describe the importance of community in a small school?
One of the wonderful things that the school offers children is a sense of empowerment. The kids come to the school and leave the school believing that they can change the world. And all of the teachers were really fantastic about that. Wendy, Sam, Christine, Deb, Catherine, Seth. They all supported the children to feel empowered and to feel that they could make change in the world around them. So, as an example, at one stage, a developer who was also on the Fremantle Council wanted to build a short stay accommodation venue right next door to the school. And from the upper stories of that, visitors would be able to look down into the schoolyard. And neither the parents nor the children nor the teachers thought that was appropriate. So I think every family in the school wrote an objection to the Fremantle City Council about that. And we all turned up to the DAC meeting where it was being considered, having each been invited. I think the DAC then freaked out because they weren't expecting 100 people to turn up to protest this particular development. And in the end, only a small number of us were allowed to attend. But I had Bob and Richard with me, the two UWA professors, who were very, very articulate and strong about why this development should not be allowed to go ahead. And we won the day in the end, and it was a great triumph for the school at that time. Not only because we didn't want that venue next to us, but because the children felt that they could make change in the world by being by protesting and making their views felt.
Whether it was being an artist or a musician or a lawyer or a public servant or a teacher or a medical, all these things require a particular commitment and self-belief if you're going to make it work. People come up and say, I was at the school at such and such a time and how great it was that I learned how to be myself, and, you know, that's a great gift.
A lot of places make a lot of bones about, you know, having, you know, oh, you know, we love hearing from ex-students and alumni and stuff like that. But Lance Holt, I feel like, takes it a bit more seriously than that. Like, it's a school that's very invested in its own history. And I think, you know, by virtue of the fact that, you know, we're all three of us ex-students sitting around in the kitchen of the school doing the interview on a Saturday of our own, you know, volition, more or less. Of our own volition. You know, I think that says something about how well that works in terms of building a really caring and good community.
Thank you for listening! And make sure you listen to the next episode where you'll hear all about the 2010s, where I was born.
This has been a Templey production.